face, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 1150. Cubs down. Sox up. Manny, what
that pretty much sums it up for the first half.
What are you? I was listening to your buddy and all your stat guys this weekend. Your buddy Boog, or his name is Moog, or who's the guy that does the Cubs?
Yeah, Boog Sciambi.
And they were doing the.
Or you can just call him John Sciambi because that's his actual name.
All right. What is the story with Sutcliffe doing the third man in a booth all week? He just was in town, or what?
It seemed like he was just in town, so they threw him in there.
He's always good.
He is, and I don't mind him, and I don't mind, you know, when Dempster and they've had Sandberg in there and stuff, but I do actually really just prefer JD. And
I do too.
All they do is just cut into JD's time, so it's just kind of, to me, it seems pointless, but.
Yeah. They have the lady out in the field, but she's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need any of the puff pieces that she does either, to be honest. But
but I don't need any.
I think they're all fine. It's just,
but I don't need any in the Olympics either, and that's all you're going to get.
I agree, but I don't watch the Olympics. But I think the all I need is just a classic two-man booth and let these guys get used to working together. Like, I'll let them breathe.
Yeah, it's I think Giambi's hard to work with. I think he's a good guy, but I think they like each other, but he's. It's not obvious when you're supposed to talk, and he's nowhere near as easy as Pat Hughes or Casper was.
Well, that's why I think they need to put these guys and let them be together, just the two of them, the whole year, and figure it out. Because I think they're both pretty talented, and it's just going to take time to get used to it. And they have moments where they're really good together, but then I agree, they have other moments that it comes off as kind of awkward, or you know, they kind of talk over each other a little bit, and that's the stuff you need to iron out. And now you keep throwing in these third guys in the booth and all these, let's go down to Taylor to talk about something no one gives a crap about. It's like, what are we doing?
I actually, whoever the lady was they had those weekends, I thought she was terrific.
Yeah, they it's a long time ESPN veteran broadcaster that does a lot of college football and early Saturday games. I'm drawing a blank on her name, but yeah, she was fine.
I mean, one of the people they had for the weekend I thought was pretty good. And then they had the Sox always seem to have different people. Now, you know what I think happened at one week? I think they're still, because the Cubs aren't all vaccinated, they can't go with the team. So I think one of the announcers, whoever he was, and Sutcliffe or somebody, drove to Milwaukee, and JD and the other guy drove to Cincinnati on the same week so they could do the games at the place.
There could be something to that. I also know that Sciambi still has in his contract that he does Sunday Night Baseball for ESPN Radio. So I guess he does that game every Sunday, so he doesn't do any Cubs games on Sundays, apparently. I don't know if that's just for this season or if that's going to continue.
Who was the guy they fired because he wanted to do, like, two football games? Was it Chip Carey or after him?
Was it Brenneman?
Yeah. Brenneman's better than any of these guys.
Oh, I highly disagree with that. Yeah, I thought he was dreadful.
I thought he was all right.
Oh, God, is he awful. Now he's fired from the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, but
I thought he was the worst. But
maybe he's not the one I'm thinking about.
But no, I think that is who you're thinking about because he did Fox NFL Sunday forever. And him and Chris Myers, I think, are the two worst NFL broadcasters I've ever heard. And both of them are Cubs announcers.
Well, I heard two things this weekend. Not that the I think it. It is appropriate because, mainly because people are in power that think this way. Your buddy Boog, all he did was talk about now the Cubs are now a seller, and what's his name, Jed, came out and sort of been doing the same thing, and they're talking about how you.
Well, if Jed says that it matters, well, he's the one doing it.
Well, but the issue there though, I think that the world of today's tickets after the. World Series and stuff, I don't think you can give somebody a horse bleep product for half a year and get away with it. the idea that the Cubs are this poor team now, where they have to get rid of everybody and have a $5 million payroll between now and the end of the year to somehow get people back. They made some horrendous trades, and you have some really good young people. I mean, the Quintana trade was horrible. there were a couple others.
See, they definitely made some bad trades, or even probably more so, some bad free agent signings that ate up the payroll, like Jason Hayward. But they also made a lot of good ones. Now, I wouldn't call the Quintana trade horrible. The Cubs knew they had a 6 or 7 year window where they were going to make the playoffs every year, and they needed a quality guy that can give you 200 innings every time, and they got that from him.
You see,
the problem was is that some other guys regressed, and they weren't as good as they were in 15 and 16, even though they were still really good. In 17, they went to the NLCS. I mean, we're still very good. And then 18, 19, 20, they really took a step back, even though they still made the playoffs 2 out of those 3 years. But I think you can't predict that, you know, Javier Baez is going to take a huge step downward after he looked in 2017 like he was going to be an MVP candidate. And that after Chris Bryant wins it in 2016, that he kind of takes a step back, even though he's still a very good player, but had injuries and different things like that. You thought Ian Happ was going to develop into something, and he hasn't. You thought Albert Almora was going to develop into something, and he never did. So, I mean, you know, and that it's an imperfect thing, you traded Gleyber to the Yankees for Chapman because you needed a dominant closer in 2016 to put you over the top. Well, you won the World Series, and he was a big part of that. Was that a bad trade? I mean, you can argue it was because...
Well, that's...
But those are decisions you make.
Well, I'm of the opinion...
It's easy in hindsight to look back.
I look at the statistics a lot different than the new stat guys do. Because I watched the Atlanta team, which was probably... best team in baseball for a decade, and they won one World Series.
Yep,
and that's
what have the Cubs done? 7 years in a row now, they made the playoffs 6 out of 7, and the one time they missed it, they blew it in the last week. They should have made it 7 straight times, and they won one World Series and made it to 3 NLCS. So if you were looking at it like you looked at the Braves, then you would say that was one of the best stretches of any team in baseball, because it was. But then if you look at it as in title or bust, you kind of feel like they underachieved a little bit.
Well, I also think that in a bigger market team, I think that your goal is always, not if you have, if you happen to draft so you got 3 really good shortstops, obviously for their well-being and yours, you trade at least one of them. I mean, I get
that's what they did.
I get that part.
They chose Baez over Gleyber.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and they lost, what's his name? Is that guy even still in baseball? The guy was a... shortstop that supposedly messed up his wife and all that stuff.
Oh, Addison Russell? No, he's out of baseball as far as I know.
Wow, he's a hell of a good player to be out of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, he wrecked his own career.
Well, yeah, he had, that's another whole story. That's probably a story we should be able to lose here. The amount of,
Yeah, he was playing in, looks like Japan.
Well,
the Kiwoom Heroes.
Yeah, wow, it's a... I think that the Cubs have to...
Actually, I should say Korea. He's playing in Korea, sorry.
I think the Cubs need to operate totally differently now that they've got nothing but money from the city and otherwise. You can't... The idea of them... I agree that you have a 7-year stretch where you make the playoffs 6 is a real good thing, but it's going to be pre-staged by a bad century, and it looks like it's going to be post-staged by a bad century. You don't see... the Boston or the L.A. or people like that all of a sudden, which the Cubs are that big of a market. And you don't see those guys all of a sudden. They might have one horrible year where a bunch of guys get hurt, but they don't give up everybody for 1 year and then say... I mean, the Bears are still riding on the 84 team, right? I mean, come on. It's been how many years? 30?
Well, so I think we're in agreement here. And I think Jed would love... the Ricketts family to say, yeah, you can spend $200 million every year, and then we'd never have to worry about it.
But they wouldn't have had to do that if they wouldn't get rid of all these young guys.
Well, what do you mean by that? What young guys?
Well, the guy in the Sox, for one.
We talked about Eloy for Quintana. Yeah. I don't think that was that bad of a trade. Now, I don't know if I would have done it.
Well, they also gave up Cease. He's better than any pitcher the Cubs got now.
Cease isn't even that good.
Well, he would easily start for the Cubs.
But, I listen, that trade... you can argue either side of that trade. And I think you could be right. It's sort of like the Sutcliffe-Joe Carter trade. You could argue either side of that trade.
And Sutcliffe and Mel Hall.
Yeah, and I think you could be right on either side of that trade. So, but to act like that was like a Brock for Beaulieu trade is asinine. I mean, that was a pretty dead even trade, and you could argue either side of it. That's how a trade should be.
The
other team isn't stupid.
The Cubs gave up a future Hall of Famer for a pitcher, and Brack was not all that.
The Cubs gave up Steve Clevenger for Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop. Yeah. That's one of the best trades in Cubs history.
Well,
the Cubs traded 2 months of Samardzija for Addison Russell, who was their starting shortstop when they won the World Series. They also picked two
Hall of Famers off the Phillies.
Right, exactly. I mean, they've made a lot of good trades.
Why is that in Chicago? Why is it that everybody remembers Brack for Beaulieu? Nobody remembers Ferguson Jenkins for a bag of balls or Ryan Sandberg for a bag of balls.
Yeah, I think people do remember them, but Brock for Beaulieu was just
well,
catchy,
I guess.
I think
the difference there is he went to the Cardinals. You had to watch him play all the time.
That could be. And have a Hall of Fame career for 15 years.
And buried you,
yeah. I think that's probably the difference.
But still, the Phillies are the ones that should be.
The Phillies have to feel terrible about that. And, yeah, how about the Orioles giving you Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop for a backup catcher? How about, like I said, 2 months of Jeff Samardzija at the end of his career for Addison Russell, who was a 21-year-old starting shortstop that hit 25 home runs and was great in the playoffs when they won the World
Series. But here's when I hear people wing these statistics around, just because people can quote them.
What statistics?
Well, the whole idea was Boog and I think, what's his name, Jedman, once your chances of being in the playoffs get to single digits, that's when you do something. In other words, he read somewhere. But I think people need to, if you're going to quote mathematics, because what I'm getting to here is the treasurer of the city of Chicago, who I had to listen to all weekend on BBM. When people quote mathematics, they should know something about mathematics. I mean, when you look at, there's percentages, and then there's like game theory on top of it, right? When you say, like, for instance, if you go play blackjack and you know what you're doing, even if you know the basic strategy or better than the basic strategy, not counting cards or anything, your chances of winning are roughly 50-50. In craps, it's almost exactly 50-50, right? I mean, if you just play the pass line or the don't pass line.
Right.
I mean, or the come line and don't come line. People, I mean, I can go through all the odds on craps, but I mean, basically it's 50-50. But if that's the case, I've seen people hold the dice for 40 minutes. I've seen people crap out 5 times in a row. That's not how odds work. Even though you can't statistically look at things strung together, things string together.
Well, I think everyone knows that.
Well, but I mean,
just because it says you have an 8% chance of making the playoffs, that does mean that 8 out of 100 times it happens.
Well,
I think people know that.
But I'm saying you can't. If you look at the end of a 10-game winning streak, it doesn't mean you're in. If you go there for the end of a 10-game, there's a lot of other things in mind. If somebody in the American League East loses 10 in a row, I'm saying they're out because they got to climb over like 8 teams. It's seemingly like 8 teams, even though there's only 3. But all the Cubs have to do, I don't have the team to do it. I get that part. But all the Cubs have to do is catch up the Brewers 8 games. Or when that all ended.
Well,
that's a whole different brand of ball than going over the Bo Sox, the Yankees, and Toronto.
Well, that's true. And right now it's back to 8 games because the Brewers lost 3 in a row to close out the first half.
Which they're doing exactly what you said. They're playing the good teams and not losing.
Yes, and the Cardinals are tied with the Cubs at 8 games back. And Cincinnati is hot. They've won 8 out of 10 and 3 in a row, and they're in second now, and they're 4 back.
They've managed to improve their team this year pretty.
Yeah,
pretty
so you have to jump over Cincinnati and Milwaukee, and you're technically St. Louis because you're tied with St. Louis. Now, I tend to agree with you. I think the Cubs have the talent that I think, when they were 11 games above 500 and in first place, everyone was like, wow, they're playing pretty well here. And then they had some injuries, and then they started playing a really tough stretch of their schedule where they played 27 of 30 games or whatever it was of teams above 500, and it just buried them. And meanwhile, the Brewers were playing kind of an easy stretch at that same time. And they shot ahead of them and played. The Brewers won like 20 out of 23 or something crazy like that, while the Cubs were losing 11 in a row. So it flipped the standings. Now, Now that the Cubs' schedule is going to soften up here on paper for the next month, should you let them try to play it out? I would like to see that, yes. But the part you're not adding in is that the Cubs have a lot of guys in the final year of their contract that they have to make decisions on. And if the Ricketts family isn't going to let Jed spend $200 million or whatever the market calls for Chris Bryant, whatever the market calls for Anthony Rizzo or Javier Baez, or if he says, okay, you can keep two out of the three or one out of the three, then you probably have to trade these guys so you don't lose them for nothing. And that's something you have to figure whether you're winning or not winning.
Well, I've always felt that this has to do with business acumen. This has nothing to do with whether you like the guys or not. I always thought that you absolutely need to sign these guys in advance. Because once you get in the free agent market, I'm going to say nobody's worth what they're paid.
Well, they did that for Rizzo, and they locked him up. So that's why they had him for so long at such an under market value, because he agreed to it. Baez and Bryant told him to kick rocks when they tried to sign him in
advance. Well, what's his name's got the agent that nobody likes?
Yeah, Bryant's got Scott Boras.
So you're going to lose him.
So, but yeah, I agree with you. You'd much rather lock him in young, like the White Sox did with who they just do that with Jimenez last year, I think. And any of those guys, if you can lock him in at a team friendly deal, as they call it, then you should absolutely do that. But if they tell you to kick rocks, I'm not doing that. Like Bryant and Baez did, then what do you do?
Well, they got the sour taste in their mouth with Bryant by holding him down his rookie year.
Yeah, for the
six
2 weeks
to
screw
him out of the year. So there's still that edge to that, right?
Absolutely, sure.
But I guess you absolutely have to avoid this free agency thing, because Bryant is not worth to anybody what he's going to get paid. Let's put it this way: there's two or three teams, and that's what I was trying to talk about on Friday, or maybe it was Thursday when you weren't here. The whole system is screwed up. The idea that you have a few people that are free agents, and then arbitration at the end of it. The owners are the dumbest people on earth collectively for letting that go through. As selfish as they are, it's crazy. I mean, like this Kimbrel. If every closer was all of a sudden free agent tomorrow, they'd all get, I'd say, market price. If you got one guy who's in the mix and there's eight teams that are a closer away from doing something good, all of a sudden the guy is going to, it's like if one car is available for sale in the city.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you can't, that's insanity.
Well,
so,
not for the players.
Well,
they love it.
They love it, yeah.
And then in exchange, they said you can basically own us for 6 years. And if you got a shortstop ahead of me, then you can just bury me in the minor leagues, and that sucks too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a whole.
So it's sort of a give and take, I guess.
Well, it's designed for the guys who make it to the top, as usual. Right? I mean, it's like football.
So they had the representation in the room.
Right, they had the representation in the room. Which is, again, the whole idea that, I mean, look what the football players did to the draft picks,
right? Yeah,
and the idea that in the fans, what fan is short for fanatic, the fans are so collectively ignorant that they were actually pissed off that the draft picks were getting so much money in their rookie contracts. And I'm sitting there as a guy looking at this as I don't care what they do in football, the idea that a guy who can't go anywhere else has so much market power. What market power does the guy have? If you came out of accounting school at Illinois and you got drafted by Ernst & Young, and the whole world is pissed off about how much you got out of Ernst & Young, what power do you have? You got to go to work for Ernst & Young.
Might as well get as much money as you can.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying how could you possibly be holding up the Bears if you can't go anywhere else?
I agree with you.
So then it brings me to the treasurer of the city. Don't you think when you get a job like that, you ought to be able to? Somebody from Duke writes this article, Maddie, about the cost of murders. Now everybody knows that, you know, the cities are paying a high price for the violence, right? And as you know, who knows if it's all, first of all, it's the person getting shot. How many people get shot you think have insurance? Not too many, I don't think, but there's a police cost, there's all kinds of costs. Well, somehow this guy writes this article and he comes up with some numbers, and the lady who's the treasurer of Chicago comes up with an inflated number. She adds inflation to it. It's worth $1.5 million of shooting. And I'm like, really? And then she had, and it figures out how many shootings there are in this. Maybe the shootings or murders. I'm on murders.
It must be murders.
And yeah, and comes out that the city of Chicago is spending $6 billion on murders.
And so, what did you see the line items of what went into that dollar amount?
Well, I mean, I'll get into that in a second. Okay. But the but then she rattles off that if we were to take the $6 billion and spend it on mental health and all kinds of other stuff, we could essentially get rid of all the murders, and we should do that instead of, because the whole point was, is that the ticker for the cost doesn't start until somebody's shot. So if we spent the money before they were shot, they wouldn't be shot. And I'm like, boy, that's a stretch.
I like where their head's at to a certain extent.
Yeah, me too.
But that's kind of a fairy tale world.
Well, then remember we, I don't know where I am. I must have it here somewhere. But
I would love to think that if you had invested in a family and the mother and father wanted to stay together before they had the kid, then they had the kid and they wanted the kid to get a good education and they stayed, you know, they helped the kid with the homework and all that stuff and kept him out of trouble or her out of trouble. Yes, I think that kid is probably not going to kill somebody. But, you know, is the government throwing money at that going to cause that to happen? I don't know. I would say I probably doubt it.
Yeah, I would sort of. Well, it hasn't yet. But then you look at the cost part. Remember, we had a... I don't think I still have it here, Matty, but maybe I do. Had to do with the cost of a shooting when you show up at county hospital. Now, I don't know who pays for this crap, but it was absolutely incredible. I think it was... Maybe you can remember better than me. In the first 20 minutes, the emergency room, we've already run up like a $20,000 bill. Like the x-rays are this, and something's that, and this is that, and the doctor's this, and this.
Well, that's because with a gunshot trauma, like, I mean, how many people are involved? I mean,
well,
it's gotta be a lot, right?
Well, but I mean,
I imagine it's very.
But on a variable cost basis, it's nothing. Because they're all there anyway.
Well, that's true.
Obviously you're planning on it, so what I said is not exactly accurate. But the point is, what kind of massive administrative costs at Cook County Hospital are you dumping on this thing? I mean, what is a person who's making, you know, $40,000 a year as an assistant in Cook County Hospital? And so all of a sudden they work on somebody. What's the cost for that somebody? What's the overhead rate they're putting on these people for all the hangers on that work at County Hospital? What are we doing here?
Well, that number's got to be astronomical, the number you got to get down.
Yeah, I'm saying there's no way that somebody, you know, I've had a couple of procedures, you know, years ago, and I get this itemized bill, and before the insurance knocked it down, it was, I'm sitting there, of course, me, because I was awake when they were doing it, I'm adding up how many people were in the room and how much I thought they all made. And some astronomical price of the room, it was like a tenth of what they sent the bill for. I mean, it's incredible what the list price of this stuff is out of these hospitals. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why our inflation rate is huge. It's one of the reasons why we're gagging as a country on money. I mean, what is going on here? So what do you think pays the bill for some guy who lands in county? On a gunshot. This is America, so you're going to treat them.
Well, is it collectively all of us that pay Cook County taxes, or is it the insurance company, or is it a combination of both?
I don't know how many of those people have insurance.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but no, I'm not saying the people. I'm saying, does the hospital have a policy that helps pay for some of that stuff?
I doubt. How can you have a policy for customers who might show up?
Because they statistically know what they're going to get year in and year out to a certain, you know, plus or minus, and do they have some sort of
coverage? I tell you what, man, that's an interesting concept. I've never heard anything like that. That a hospital emergency room would buy insurance for people actually coming in the emergency room.
It makes you wonder if like to your point, you know, what's the percentage of these people that have insurance? I would say it's pretty low,
right? Real low.
If you're talking about gunshot victims in Chicago. So because of that, can the hospital take out some sort of
actually,
policy?
You know, under a certain age, everybody's on Medicaid in Illinois.
Is that, what, under 18 or is it under 16?
We happen to have a lady who moved into your apartment who's an expert on all this and is willing to come in. She was giving me a long story one night, and I I was astounded at how much I didn't know. I mean, these, but she's like an encyclopedia. Where the, I mean, at this age, if your parents don't have insurance, you're covered by this. If they are, it's covered. There's got to be 15 plans that all overlap.
Is that part of Obamacare, or is that
no? It's all this is state,
state stuff. Okay,
I think Quinn passed it. You know what? I'm speaking only because
yeah, we should get her on.
I think if you're under 12, you're essentially, is it 12 or 15? You're covered by Medicaid. You're automatically on Medicaid, even if you don't even know it.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So, like I said, I learned more in 10 minutes while she was talking, and then because she goes, "I'd like to come on the show," and I said, "What do you want to talk about?" I'm giving her grief, and she goes, "What do you mean? I could talk all about you know, the medical stuff and who pays for it." And she rattled off, and I'm thinking, yeah, you can. I know like 2% of what you know, and I'm sitting there. I was like a sponge absorbing. If the family's got their own insurance, obviously the kid's covered by that. If they're not, then the kid's covered, even if the parents aren't. And she's one of the amazing parts is most of the parents don't even know that, so they don't even take the kids in to get like physicals and stuff, knowing that they're covered, which makes it worse because if they have something wrong with them. I mean,
if the parents don't have insurance, then yes, they're probably hesitant to take the kid in for physicals, knowing that a 12-year-old boy is probably fine. But they should probably still do that, and they don't even know that they're covered, is what it sounds
right.
Like.
Right. But it's amazingly complicated. It's like slashes of probably 10 different bills. So if somebody on this age is covered by this bill, somebody on this age is by another bill, and somebody here is half covered by the U.S. government and half covered by the state. I mean, how complicated it is, I mean, nobody could know it unless that was your job. SP Futures down 750, NASDAQ Futures up 34. Right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-401. 8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 8 bucks. The NASDAQ futures up 33. Dow down 128. Now, last Thursday, we were down early. Was it Thursday or Wednesday? We were down real heavy, and then all of a sudden we came back a little bit that day, came back a little the next day, and we blew right through the records on Friday. So, it was by the dippers, one yet again, and the guys who sold got egg on their face or not much money in their account. So, today we're down a little bit again, but not very much. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 11, let's call that flat. FTSE down 39.6%, CAC ran down 16.2%, so slow slightly to the downside in Europe. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 628, that's up 2.25%. Now these guys were down all that week and then we came back, so they're kind of catching up. They had some pretty big down days over there. Shanghai up 23, that's 0.7%. Hang Seng down up 170.6%. They had a couple. They were probably the biggest to the downside last week. Friday, Dow was up 448. It's 1.3%. S&P up 48, 1.1%. Nasdaq up 142. That's a full 1%. Bonds 1.34, still down. I mean, low. Despite the inflation stuff, they're down. Bund minus 0.30, and Japan is positive 0.03, but actually they were 5 or 6, looking like they were going higher, and then they stopped. Oil down $1.06 to $73.50. Brent down $1.01 to $74.54. Natural gas down 2 cents to $3.65. Gold we've got down $9 to $18.01, just hanging by a thread over 1800. Silver down 24 cents to $25.98. Copper down 4 cents to $4.30. And we've got our favorite crypto down 217. This is Bitcoin at $33,705. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, man?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build on the Kennedy. That's probably our slowest moving expressway right now, but no accidents to report. Looks like a lot of people heading out to O'Hare because it's a lot of red in that area. And I don't know if people are returning to business travel or what after a quiet week last week, but a lot of red near O'Hare on the Kennedy. Edens looks okay. No issues on the Eisenhower yet. Same for the Stevenson. Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. A couple of crashes in the area out in the western suburbs. We have an accident, Roosevelt Road at Lavier Road. I haven't seen that one before. Out west. And then northwest of there's a crash at Merger Road in Bartlett. It's at Merger and Naperville Road in Bartlett there. And then west of there, it looks like in Naperville, starting today, a railroad crossing work is scheduled to close Deal Road in both directions from Eola Road and Frontanic Road until the end of the week. So you have to detour via Ferry Road to the north or North Aurora Road to the south. So there you go. Weather today, clouds early, some rain in the forecast, mild temperatures, a high of 73. In fact, we have rain in the forecast for the majority of this week, unfortunately.
Well, help the Cubs out.
Yeah, after a rainy day all day yesterday on Sunday. Right now it is dry still and 67 going up to a rainy high of 73. For our Phoenix listeners, they actually have rain in the forecast today too, but it'll be a hot and steamy rain as there'll be a high of 109 today with rain in the area. Right now it's clear and 92. In sports, the White Sox finished strong, winning 5 in a row to close out the first half before the All-Star break as they came back to beat Baltimore in 10 innings last night, or yesterday afternoon. 7-5 was the final in that one. Adam Engel broke a 4-4 tie with a 3-run blast in the top of the 10, and the Sox held on to win that one. As Chief mentioned, Cubs-Cardinals was rained out at Wrigley yesterday. No makeup date announced yet for that one. The Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 7-4 to close out their dreadful first half. So as we take a look at our All-Star break standings, the White Sox are 54-35, first place in the AL Central by 8 games over second place Cleveland. White Sox finished winning 7 out of 10, and as I mentioned, 5 in a row. So they're playing good ball here heading into the break. The Cubs are 44-46, 2 games below 500. They dropped 8 out of 10 to close out the All-Star break. They're tied for St. Louis for third in the NL Central behind Cincinnati and Milwaukee. Diamondbacks, worst team in baseball, 26-66, 40 games below 500, Chief, at the All-Star break. They're 32.5 behind first-place San Francisco in the
their
NL
last,
West.
Their last 58 games are 8-50.
That's unbelievable.
I don't think I've ever heard that. That's worse than the 62 Mets.
Yeah. Suns went on the road last night, game three of the NBA Finals, and they were blown out in Milwaukee. 120-100 was the final in that one. Suns lead the best of seven, 2-1. The European Soccer Championships, it was Italy beating England on penalties, 2-1 at Wembley Stadium to upset England there. Looked like England had that game won early in the penalties, but Italy's goalie made some big saves, and England was whiffing on the goal, which is seems hard to do with that huge net, but congrats to the Italians beating England. And lastly, Lucas Glover, the American, shoots a 19-under and wins the John Deere Classic over in Silvis, Illinois. Chief.
One of my posse members, who's really into this European soccer. By the way, can I stop pretending like I give a rat's behind about European soccer now?
You may. I don't care that much either, but it was entertaining when there was nothing else on.
In order to be cool now, you gotta act like you care. And I have to be cool, of course.
Of course, yes.
I mean, you have to, you know.
But if there's nothing else on, like for example, yesterday afternoon, the White Sox win, which is great. The Cubs are rained out, so there's nothing on. Final NBA Finals don't start until 7 or 7:30, whatever it was. So flipped the soccer game on, and it was actually pretty exciting. Went to extra time, and then went to the penalty kicks, and that was good theater.
I know it's a terrific sport, and it's the world's equivalent to 16-inch softball. One ball, one bat, and 20 people can play.
Yep.
I mean, I absolutely get that. And if I was anywhere else, I mean, I probably would love to play it if I was grew up with it.
Well, your family's big soccer people. Your nieces and nephews, and
yeah,
and then. Didn't your brother coach for a while?
My brother loved coaching it because when Tim, who's now 40-ish, when he was a young kid, my brother didn't want to coach Little League because all the parents think they know too much, right? So he wanted no part of that. So he actually went to a soccer camp for a week or 5 days. It was a long weekend to actually learn the game because we never played it. And he learned all the rules and all that stuff. And he went, you know, he's like that. And he coached soccer before any of the parents knew anything about it.
Right.
So nobody gave him any crap.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
But if you ever coach like 8-year-old soccer, it's like a big scrum. You know, I mean, there's no spacing. Everybody just goes after the ball and they're all piling into each other. It's actually kind of fun to watch.
But didn't your niece was pretty good. Like, she played high school and
stuff.
Yeah,
she played Whitney Young, and they were city champs like 3 years in a row.
Yeah, she was like a real player.
And they had a couple girls on the team. One was this Asian girl. She ended up getting a scholarship to Annapolis. She's real bright too.
Oh wow.
And real nice kid. I mean, and yeah, she was, you know, really good at soccer, and she was pretty smart. Annapolis snapped her right up. So they had a few girls out there that got rides out of Whitney Young. But the difference between your Whitney Young and public schools and the factories and the suburbs or some of the Catholic schools was night and day. I mean, John, it was scary. They won the city, but they would have gotten annihilated by like Mother McCauley or somebody. And but you know, just because of the difference in, I mean, if you play a sport for, you know, New Trier or Mother McCauley, I mean, they own you. Where in the public schools they don't. They one game they won, but they played kind of crummy against this really awful team. So the coach says, "All right, we're going to have a Saturday practice." And all the team managers raise their hand. They go, "Nah, I'm working in my mom's store. I can't be there. I got to help my dad out." So everybody said basically no practice on Saturday. He goes, "All right, no practice on Saturday." I mean, that would never go down in New Trier, Mother McCauley, or someplace. I mean, they tell the parents it was like, "We own your kid," and which I think is pretty screwed up on top of it. I mean, you're talking about high school, for God's sake. But that's not the way, you know, the world is now. And if you play volleyball at McCauley or Marist or something, do you have a life other than that? I don't think so. I mean, it's worse than college in some ways. In some way, these high schools are crazy on this stuff. Anyway, John, did you see the thing I sent you regarding this? Well, and we have the Biden administration now is going crazy. Janet, Maddie's great-grandmother, Janet Yellen, was crowing over the weekend how close they are to get to a 15% worldwide rate for these corporations, right? Why would anybody want a corporation to pay less than an individual? Why would, or a smaller corporation like Stocks and Jacks? Why would those guys ever pay less? I mean, in anybody's mentality, other than the fact that they've got power and run the place.
Right. I mean, it shows the utter callousness, you know, and the moral distinctions that people make about who's really important and who deserves special treatment. It just kind of makes your jaw drop. But
what can you say other than
to condemn it?
You guys answer me this. Why can't we pick a rate that, I'm not going to say that covers everything now because they're spending so much money. I don't think there is such a rate. But pick a rate that makes some sense. And I'm going to say somewhere in a neighborhood of 25-30%. And just of the upper tax rate, and just say everybody pays it. I mean, if you make over, you know, 100 grand a year or a corporation or whatever it is, you pay 30%. And oh, by the way, if you pay a dividend to somebody else to stop the double taxation, you can deduct the dividend because the person who gets it has to pay. Why? This was proposed by one of my professors in University of Chicago in 1975. It's still a good idea, and we're so far away from that. I mean, we're so worried about giving somebody preference. Why can't everybody just be the same here?
I have no response other than why not. I mean, it's a heck of a lot more sensible to do that than to reduce the corporate rate, which, you know, really doesn't mean that that's what all corporations are going to pay either, because there'll be endless finagling below that floor that some corporations will benefit from, and bribery and everything else. So it isn't as if corporations are even going to pay 15% across the board. All it does is just, you know, encourage further or more aggressive attempts to get the rate down even lower.
And it's not, I mean, you can come up with all kinds of, who was the, I don't know, guy you love to hate? Bill Ackman was on. He was the guy that had the, who was the other dude? They were having the big fight over that one company, man. One guy was long stacked, another guy was short, and all they do were on TV forever, and it was so nauseating listening to him. What was the other guy's name? I can't remember, but one of the listeners probably will tweet in with it. And he was on one day talking about his taxation and how he feels that he can do much more good with his money than the government can. He does a lot of charity. He's a philanthropist. He's everything. You know, the reason why he wears a shirt with a button down as his heart doesn't pop out. You know, the whole story. He always hard to pop out of his chest. I mean, can you name any person, anybody, me included, that can't give you five reasons why that me spending money is better for the world than the government spending my money? I mean, Maddie, you sure could, right? I mean,
of course, anyone could.
Anyone could. So why are we listening to this guy, you know, jaw diarrhea at us? You know, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, what's the whole point? The whole idea is if somebody else doesn't pay, I mean, I'm a simple guy. If somebody doesn't pay their fair share, me and the people I care about got to pay more. And you know what? I dare anybody to debate that with me. I mean, how can you?
Not me.
Well, not to mention the economic, I'll use the term externalities. You know what that term is, Jen? You do, I'm sure. You know what economic externality is?
Yeah, but you got to refresh me, Tom.
Well, actually, the guy just croaked. Ronald Coase was the guy's name. And I thought the guy, I read this thing when I was in college, and it was old then, right? the guy's study. And it's a classic study on essentially pollution and everything else. It was set in a village in England, and some plant came in. Of course, everybody wanted the plant because everybody wants jobs. So some plant comes in, and this is back when plants essentially belched coal dust, right? And the whole thing didn't have to do with cancer and all the other stuff. It was just simple. I mean, most of the studies that are good are very simple. And it had to do with everything belching coal dust. That in those days there wasn't any paint, so you got, I don't even, what was whitewash? Was it, I guess, the white dye and some kind of, some, you know,
it was
some,
like
some,
like chalk dust or something. It was not threatening to the environment, but it was a.
Well, I think it was. I think it was in like it was an oil based thing, and you put white in there to make it, like, you put it on wood fences as a preservative, and the white was some kind of a powder, like you said, it made the fence look sort of white, but you basically did it for the preservative. It was like mineral based,
right.
Almost like a not an acetone or something you would put on, like a varnish without varnish. Anyway, but the point was, when after the plant came in, people used to have to whitewash their fences and houses every 5 years. But since the plant was belching coal dust, you had to do it every 3 years. So you essentially push this cost onto other people that the plant owners never, gave people money for. They never compensated them for. So that's the definition of that is called an economic externality, because you have pushed one of your costs onto other people, to people external from your company. So hence the name externality, which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So, but what people, I don't think, get with this idea that some people pay 15% and other people pay a lot more, is that's why you have corporations this size, is because all of a sudden Maddie and I own a hot dog stand and we see another one come available. Well, guess what? Who's going to buy the hot dogs? Who's going to bid more? Maddie and I have been paying the full rate on the taxes, or somebody else who has their hot dog stand licensed in Bermuda and has only been paying a fifth of the tax we've been paying. I'm going to say that when one comes on the market, they're going to be able to spend more than we are, right?
Right.
And which is not what you want. I mean, the first companies that took their drug companies overseas were the ones, I think, that were more successful buying all the drug companies. And now other drug, not all of them, but which is not, I think, what we want, right?
But no, plus you immunize them from damages and class action suits and to boot too. So you free up all that money that any other corporation would have to set aside money for just to do business. So,
well, I mean, look at the Amtrak. Amtrak went to is building, I don't know how many more cars, and everybody knows how near and dear that is to me because I did a lot of work on the original Amtrak cars, Now Siemens is making them. Why do we need Siemens to make them? What, we don't have anybody here who can make railroad cars?
Yeah, really, for us, me too.
I mean, I don't get it. I don't. I mean,
same thing with the transit systems all over the country always need rolling stock to replace the stuff that's wearing out. And where do they go for it? Where do they get the best price? It isn't an American manufacturer ever. I mean, it's just, it drives me.
Well, CTA cars are being built by a Chinese company.
Yeah.
They're being assembled here, so they have union workers here assembling them. So it's not all horrible, but I don't get it, John. I mean, there's a way to do this, and we're so far away from the way to do it. I don't even want to go into it. If a car lasts 25 years and you've got X number of cars in the fleet, you should get four cars delivered every month, or two cars delivered every month. And you should constantly have your stock rotated that way. And at the end of every 12 years, if the manufacturer was in the area, you roll the car in there and you have a complete rework of the car. Because 12 years is a lot. People in it like every minute of the day. And have a total revamp of the car after 12 years. After 25, you throw it out. Right? Or something
right.
along those lines. And this is not, and if the plant was somewhere near here, if you ever needed a refit or somebody came out with the latest and greatest best light, or something, you could rotate the cars through there and put new lights in it or something. I mean, there should be 60 people working there all the time and pumping up, or maybe 100, pumping out two cars a month or four cars a month, however the math works. Right? I mean, this is so simple, I can't believe that we're not getting there. I mean, and the CTA, the superstructure, your footings last what 100 years?
And there's with luck. Yeah.
And when they're not, well, they do. They last. If you do it right, they last that long. So there's 90 bazillion footings in there. Divided by 100 years, you got to do how many a week, or how many a month? That's how many you should do. Start at one end, and 100 years from now, you go back to there and start over again. You don't wait till the whole thing's ready to fall down, then close it for 2 years and do all of them. Right.
That's right.
But that's what we do.
Well, and it used to be that all the railroads were experts at this. They had people riding hand cars on all the Burlington, Santa Fe. They had a whole task, like a stretch that they covered in a single day, and they replaced loose spikes. They t- single day because there was always stuff happening. There was sabotage rings, there were strike breakers, all this stuff that was, you know, strikers who were, you know, endangering travel. So you had vigilance that you don't have anymore at all.
Matty, did you ever see anybody going buying one of those hand cars?
Oh, that's what my great grandfather did on the Burlington, I mean, between Big Rock and Sugar Grove, Illinois.
Wow.
Wow.
He was outdoors every day, rain or shine. You know, of course, I never met him, but he's apparently a pretty tough guy.
Well,
you have to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was, I bought this truck out in Vernal, Utah. I was actually a Dodge Ram Charger, and I'm driving back. So I stop in Ogallala, Nebraska, right? I pull in, and of course, there's a bar restaurant associated with the place I was staying. And run in, I finally get. They'd stopped serving, John, but the lady liked me so much, she went in the kitchen and made me a ham sandwich, so I guess that was good. So I'm sitting there having a cocktail, and this guy next to me is playing one of the games on the bar. I'm looking at the dude, and the guy's got forearms like Popeye, right? And finally we start talking. I said, by the way, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a track guy. Well, that didn't surprise me. You know, the guy was strong as an ox. Well, he'd worked his way up where he had a 25-mile stretch of the Union Pacific in Nebraska, like the original main line of the Transcontinental Railroad. He had 20 or 30 mile stretch that he was responsible for. And, you know, made sure that every spike, like you say, was where it's supposed to be and so forth. And he said he had a crew of, you know, how many people, but that's what they did. And he was saying there was so much traffic that you almost couldn't do any work on it. I mean, he said you learn a lot. I mean, you learn a lot from everybody. You talk to them. That every freight train goes exactly 55 miles an hour, and they're 20 minutes apart. So you can't be gaining on the guy ahead of you or losing ground. And he says, they come so fast. This is when they were doing they had a real lot of unit trains with the coal. There's less of that now because there's less coal plants. But he goes, literally, when you're driving on I-80, they're right next to you. And you swear the headlights on the trains, they were so off, it was like a car coming at you. But he goes, yeah, we had a derailment, and we had 60 trains backed up before we got the tracks fixed. He goes, the corporate was so pissed. He says, but if you have a siding where, you know, you have access to the rail, he says, you almost can't get on because if you don't time it just right, you can't pull out. They almost can't make a train because there's so many trains. You want that, you know, you want a gap
right
between them. You almost. You know, there's no way you could run a passenger train over there at 80 miles an hour. You'd be running people off the rails. So, I mean, those guys are, we've dropped down and gotten rid of so many lines that they're really busy in some of these lines. I mean, I got to believe that the Burlington is, especially when they were doing all that oil up in Montana, right, or Dakota, where it was. They were shipping a lot of that they had unit oil trains, right? I haven't seen one of those.
Oh, yeah,
in a while.
Line up to Seattle and all through North Dakota. Yeah,
but they were coming through here. You saw
they come through here too. Yeah,
you saw unit oil trains. So, John, have you looked at the? Well, this one, Matty, I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but now which country are you going to here? Are you going to St. Kitts? Is about the only one here.
That's why I renounce my citizenship.
Yeah, you got to renounce your citizenship
and get a huge tax bill.
Well, the reason what got me started on this the story about the corporations. Is there's a lot of, well, we're not, you know, Matty might be. Matty, are you or Jill one of those closet, you know, put $5,000 in Bitcoin like 10 years ago and now it's worth like $1 million or something?
Unfortunately, no.
Well, now, here's this lady, and she's a looker on top of everything else. She looks good even with the mask on, for God's sake. She's got this thing called a world passport. So some attorney who charges $20,000 a person, right,
that's her fee, right? On
yeah.
top of everything else.
That's her fee. Well, she put this group together. Her name is, and what is she, a surfer?
Ananina, I think she's Russian.
Russian expatriate Katie Ananina has spent the last 3 years helping people dodge taxes and their Bitcoin gains. It's all part of her mission to stick it to the man, one case of tax avoidance at a time. If you weren't married, Matty, you'd love this girl. And she's attractive, and she's, I'll say she's aggressive. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. For a 26-year-old with speedboat racer?
Yeah. God. But she's got, isn't your stereotypical Bitcoin maximalist, a phrase used to describe people who believe that Bitcoin is the future of finance. Born and raised in I don't know, Chelyabinsk, city in central Russia, 90 miles north of the Kazakhstan border. The former, how do you become a sailboat racer out of central Russia?
It's even a long way to the Volga from there.
How would you even begin to do that? Moved to the States in 2016 after landing a green card.
With speaking no English either, right?
Yeah. So if she's a... Now, Maddie, I'm going to ask you to be the sexist person here. Did she get this green card because of her status as the world's top sailor or because she's smoking hot?
I'll just say a combination of both.
There you go. So 5.5 years ago, she spoke no English, but you'd never know it to meet her. The appeal of Bitcoin was laid bare when she saw the Russian currency drop 50% during the 2 months she was living in Spain while competing for the Russian national sailing team in early 2015. So she's 26 now, so when she's 20, she's competing for the Russian sailing team. Good for her. She goes, by the way, what's our currency dropping per year now? 10%?
Oh yeah, at least.
So we're going down the same road, but nobody knows it. I mean, nobody thinks about it. She goes, my macroeconomics professor wasn't able to explain that to me. There was no chance I could run my equations and figure out what happened there. I realized I wasn't happy with how money works, so she became a Bitcoin evangelist. So there's a bunch of places in the world where you can go. And then there's another picture of her. Yes, she is smoking hot, not that I noticed. This place is called Plan B Passport. Helps hundreds of people from countries like the U.S., the U.K., Australia, and Canada obtain a second passport. And the passport says World Passport on it, Maddie. So you can either go to St. Kitts and Nevis, or whoever that is. St. Kitts is at least, it's in the Caribbean, right?
Yeah. That
doesn't sound horrible. Antigua and Barbuda, Dominica, wherever the hell that is.
Yeah, these are all, they're Caribbean. I think Vanuatu is on there.
Vanuatu, I remember from a John Wayne movie. It's in the South Pacific, because that was one of the islands that they were taking from the Japanese.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Then Grenada. Grenada's in the Caribbean.
Caribbean.
St. Lucia and Portugal. So Portugal's in here.
Yeah. I don't know how Portugal is, if there's the only thing down an island.
But here's what you have to do. You got to come up with... This sounds like the people from China becoming citizens here, right, Maddie? We remember we did that report that one day? In St. Lucia, you can obtain citizenship by an investment of between a $100,000 donation to the government of St. Lucia, $250,000 in a government bond, or $300,000 in real estate. So the average check from her customers ranges from $130,000 to $180,000, and she demands $20,000 for her legal fees. Of course, she's not a lawyer, but she demands it for her legal fees. This is spectacular. I love this. So you have to have a real lot of Bitcoin to cover a $100,000 donation, right? So if you do the math, you got to have probably $500,000.
Like $100,000 donation. I mean, in some cases, to be eligible for the passport, and that doesn't get you off the hook in your other country. I mean, with the second passport, it doesn't mean that the country of your first passport is going to give you, a waiver on your tax liability. So that's at least in the U.S. and other countries probably treat it differently, but this is not a cure-all as far as I can see. This does not get rid of tax liability.
Well, but if you're Jan Flanagan and you own 15 six flats and $40 million in brokerage stuff and everything, it's hard for you to escape. But I got to believe if you're the 21-year-old young lady who happened to buy the Bitcoin when you were 15 and the government doesn't even know you have it, I'm thinking you could probably head to St. Kitts and you're probably good to go. Just thinking. I mean, I don't know, but not that if they knew what you were doing, they'd be after you, but how would they know?
Right, and they might not find out until much later, then they'd spend the rest of time chasing you down, so.
I don't know if how would they even find out?
Well, in the article that you sent around, the IRS's position is if you renounce your U.S. citizenship, which is technically the only way you can get rid of your tax liabilities, is that you are presumed to have sold all of your assets the day before the renunciation, which, of course, would incur capital gains and anything else. But if you have your renunciation already in the works, it would look like that's just a, you know, a judgment that's going to follow you around. If you ever get any assets back in the U.S. or if you're caught here or something else, you can be arrested. But it's, you know, getting the money is going to be a lot more difficult than if you were already a citizen.
Well, so if you
looks like it's, you know, it's pushing knocking the can down the road. It gives them a remedy against you, but it doesn't guarantee payment of any taxes that are owed.
Well, I had a client who's long since passed, but he was a big developer in Phoenix. He didn't like Bill Clinton. The guy was a war hero. He spent time in a German POW camp. He was a navigator. I mean, you know, kind of crazy, but he got a hair up his behind. They didn't like Bill Clinton, and he was an expatriate. They didn't want to pay. He was terrified of the estate tax, John, and the reason why. He actually had a legitimate reason. The IRS being the IRS, and any kind of bureaucrat. Maddie, it's a long time away for you, you know, because you'll probably live to be 120 by the time every year people live longer, right? So, if you croak and have a bunch of assets, they come in if you're over, what is it, $1 million, Jen, or whatever million state tax case they know.
Slightly more, I think.
But if you walk in there, they're going to assess what you own, your assets. And they're going to say, gee, that painting was done by Thomas, and it's worth $1 million, even though you didn't pay anything for it, right? And Thomas now is a famous artist someplace. They're going to want their, you know, whatever the percentage is, 30, 40, I don't know what the state tax is, of that painting at $1 million. They're going to want a $400,000 check out of you.
Which is insanity.
Which is, now, if you sell it for $100, it's not like you only owe them 40.
Right.
They want the huge amount. So this guy, when they moved to Arizona, his wife was a terrific lady. I mean, one of the nice people I ever met. She befriended this Indian artist, and he's got to be way dead too. But they must have had, and he was really good as a painter, and he did some sculpting. So they probably had, because when he was young, the only one buying any of his stuff was this guy's wife. But the guy kept painting him, and all of a sudden he becomes, you know, an instant sensation that took 20 years in the making. And now he's selling his stuff for pretty much real money. Well, they probably had 25, 40 pieces of this guy's. And now he's a name. So this guy's horror was that they're going to come in and say, every one of these things is worth like $200,000 a pop. And by the way, you got 40 of them. We want to check. So the deal was, this is in the 90s, that you could take all your personal property with you. And literally what you did is you walked into the embassy or someplace, or you walked into some U.S. government office with your tax return, the IRS, here's my, like you do it this year. You'd walk in January and you'd say, here's my 21 tax return, it's up to date, I owe you $50,000, here's a check, see ya. And you renounce your citizenship essentially right there, right, John?
Yeah.
And then by that time you should have done whatever you have to do to get one in some other place. But at that time you could take your personal property with. I don't know if these guys consider Bitcoin personal property. I think they're going to chase you for that, John. I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
But now they didn't chase, but they weren't going to chase him for his paintings. He could move those someplace. The best story I ever got for the IRS and how stupid some of these guys can be. I'm not big on taxidermy, but some guy had a stuffed bald eagle. The thing is huge. That some super, I don't know, I guess there's famous taxidermists. I don't know anything about it. Do you, Jen? But anyway, there's a guy that he stuffed this bald eagle for this guy. Now, a bald eagle is an endangered species. So you can't traffic in any feathers, you can't traffic in anything from the things. So they give the guy some bill that this thing's worth $500,000 because this guy stuffed it. It was a taxidermist. But he couldn't sell it because it was against the law to sell it. They still wanted their money. I'm reading this going, this can't be America. But it was. And I don't know what happened. He fought him forever. They finally, cooler heads prevailed in some court, I think. But he couldn't sell it. If he would have sold it, they could have put him in jail. But they wanted their, like, $200,000 from the guy. anyway.
That's a catch 22. Oh,
got you. So anyway, you go to these places, and if you go to St. Kitts, and I think if you're just, I'll bet you Thomas could get away with it, Matty. Just goes there. And
yeah.
He works for Stocks and Jacks from St. Kitts. Nobody knows. How would anybody know he has Bitcoin? Well, they would know if he had to cash a couple of them in here to get the $100,000 donation and paid his girl $20,000. So I guess if you had to cash some here before you went, they'd probably could track you down, right? I'm thinking. Is St. Kitts nice? I mean, Portugal.
Oh, God, yeah. It's spectacular. That's where Alexander Hamilton was born, I think.
Really?
He came here, you know, at a young age, but he was born on a plantation. It was a British colony. Still is, I think, a British. It might be independent now.
Well, it must be if they have their own passport.
Yeah. But, you know, I got to tell you, I was on a vacation one time in St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands with a bunch of guys, and one of them ran into this old friend of his from Chicago in a bar in St. Thomas, and this guy had left Chicago fairly mysteriously some years before, and nobody had ever heard about him again. So this guy ran into him, bar, old buddy he hadn't seen in years, and they had a nice conversation. At the end of the conversation, the guy said, I prefer that you not tell anybody back in Chicago that you saw me down here. I thought, well, I got the impression everybody in this bar was in a similar situation. It just had a kind of a shady feel to it. I think there's a lot of people in these places, St. Kitts and elsewhere, that are just, you know, hiding out.
Expats.
Hiding up into people in St. Kitts, too.
Well, how does Portugal fit in? Is Portugal going not in the EU?
No, it's got to be EU.
Well, how do they get...
I wouldn't class Portugal as that kind of a shady, you know, tax haven or corrupt, you know, haven for crooks. But it's interesting that it's on this list. They must be looking for money or something.
So are you accusing somebody dodging Bitcoin taxes as a crook?
Oh, no, not at all.
You just said that.
You know, I too make a distinction between tax evasion and avoidance. I'm all for tax avoidance. You know,
well, sure, her point is
you don't incur the tax.
Well, she's got
having incurred it, you know, you got to pay it. So.
Well, she's got $1 million. I mean, she started off by saying she had $1 million worth of stuff, and the last thing she needed to do is write a $400,000 check to somebody she never even knew. I mean, she wasn't here. I mean, obviously, she doesn't feel she's a citizen of any place. She's been all over, right?
Right.
I mean, here at least we.
Yeah, she doesn't have any real love for any of these places. I don't think.
She's a little young for me, but you know, Jen, you know, she might like older guys. She's available. I don't think you'd.
I'll just get rid of all my assets first.
Yeah, get rid of all your assets first. God,
what few I have left.
It is stunning, though, isn't it? So, what do you make of we have to talk about it a little bit because I always do. I was at one of these restaurants that Audrey and I go to on Saturday night. And what do you suppose the bartender and the hostess were doing, like, right next to us?
Video poker? Or?
No, they're getting a new list of all the new prices.
Oh, God.
So everybody's raising prices, right?
Adding zeros.
Well, no, it's a little place in Mokina, so they were, you know, they were outraged because they were going from, like, 6 to 6.25 on a house wine, you know, so it's not like... I kept saying, man, those are like $9 downtown. Really, man? Why would anybody pay $9 for a glass of crummy wine? I'm like, well, they do. You know? And so they were going through the whole mess. And, Audrey would get a vodka and tonic or vodka and soda, and they were going to go from like 6 to 6.50. So they get all done. And talk about timing. Once in a while, your timing's okay, even if you're not a comedian. So... Audrey said, I might have one more. And I go, yeah, have one more. I said, next week, you can only get one. The prices are going up. And both of them looked at me like, really? And I go, no, it'll be okay at $6.50 or whatever. But they were terrified to raise any prices, and they're not even close to where. But it's so soft side, Jan. They got this really nice menu. But instead of printing a new menu, which they didn't want to do, somebody went through with whiteout a little, and then they put the new prices, and somebody hand wrote them all in. But
the places I used to go to put masking tape over the old one,
yeah,
right over the lousy ballpoint pen.
But it's really something that these the way some of these prices are going up.
Well, yeah, and I think it's not just that they're making up for lost income when there was a shutdown. But I think they're also banking in case there's another shutdown, which, you know, you never say never. Look at it. Every airline ticket you buy today, you're still paying for a 9/11.
Well, yeah.
it's an institutionalized surcharge now that I can't expect it ever to go away. I don't know why it would go away. I mean, and the chances are it's going to go up rather than go away. So, but it's the same thing with the restaurant business. I think things are so tight, and the fuse is so short that if they don't have some kind of a stockpile, even with things reopening, the next time around they're not going to survive. You know, that'll be a certainty. So they're making it up now, and as long as they can. And the only thing that's going to drive prices down is what? I mean, it would be something like the Depression, you know, where everything just collapsed. But I don't think it's going to happen quite that way. But as a result, I don't see prices coming down again. I think a restaurant meal is going to become kind of a luxury item, and not just a fancy meal, but any meal. Be more than the average person can justify spending. So.
Well, Jan, I think that if I was still in school and had nothing but time and wanted to get a fit, a PhD, I don't know if I'd want to be Dr. Chief. That would sound lousy. But this is an absolute smorgasbord of economic papers and economic theory. I mean, when you look at, because if you're a purist, which I think I still am, none of that stuff means anything. There's a supply and demand right now today for whatever it is you're selling, and anything that's competitive, right? I mean, if the price of corn goes down, 8 cents today at the Board of Trade, it really doesn't matter what you paid for your seed 4 months ago. This is the price.
Right.
If you happen to get a bargain on seed, good for you. If you didn't, you know, tough toenails, as they used to say, right? So the idea that somebody says, well, they're raising them because they're making up for something. They're raising them because of this. John, they're raising them because they can. Because the new... And I think a lot of that has to do with a lot of places that have closed. The competition is way less. I think that there's a lot less competitive places out there. Now, the fact that you... I mean, what about the place that made a fortune and still got $500,000 from the government? You don't see them cutting their prices in half, do you?
No.
I mean, one has nothing to do with the other. It has to do with what can I get today and what is the market today? If it's because I'm the only saloon in the five around here within driving distance, I'll close down. That's the reason why I can raise my prices. Not because, I mean, granted, cost makes a difference. I mean, if you're charging $3 for a bottle of beer in a bar and you can't buy the bottle of beer for less than $4, well, I don't think you're going to be in business too long, right? So you have to start at the basic spot of what your stuff's costing you, correct?
Right.
So, I mean, there is in the long run, there's clearly a correlation between your costs and what you have to charge, correct? But what you can charge, I mean, the reason why you can raise you can double your umbrella price in a downpour is not because of what you paid for the umbrella, right? It's because of the downpour.
Right. That's right.
So, I mean, when people, you know, get on TV and make all this money, they should have some idea of, when they start quoting economic stuff, they should have some idea what they're talking about. But a lot of them don't. And the writers surely don't. But I mean, right now, the reason why these people are raising the price is because they can. It has nothing to do with making up. Does anybody care when you go in for gasoline and something, gasoline sometimes comes down? Actually, it did this week. I paid $3.17 yesterday in a Homer Glen. Now, if that guy would have bought his load of gas 2 weeks ago when it was higher, does anybody care whether he's making or losing money at $3.17? $3.17 is the price on that corner. It just is. He doesn't get to control it.
Well, yeah, before the pandemic, I became fond of this local brewery product, which will go nameless, but
beer?
I was introduced to it at a restaurant. Quite liked it, you know, and when I could find it, and it wasn't offered in that many places, I would buy it. And it was like $7.99 for a 4-pack. It was, you know, 16-ounce cans. Pricey by Chicago standards, but I thought it was worth it, and it was something you didn't mind splurging on. Hard to find during the pandemic. Now it's featured again in my local liquor store at $13.99 for four pack 16 ounce cans, which is, you know, I can't really justify that, but it makes me think that if you go into a restaurant where this thing is featured, they're probably charging $14 a can there.
Yeah.
So they can charge $13.99 for a four pack in a liquor store. It isn't like there's any sort of relationship now to scarcity or the cost of production or anything else. It's because this is what the market allows. So why not?
Well, it is, and the question is, are they raised it up there? Has it been a successful price raise? Are they down? No, nothing in sales. Are they down 10%? Are they down 50%? Have they not sold a four pack? I mean, you don't know that.
They probably just identified that they can do this because the places where they're selling at, the restaurants that have also jacked up their prices, have a self-identifying clientele that are willing to pay those prices and don't miss the money. And the same thing in a liquor store too. So they just redefined who they're pitching this thing to.
If you had to guess, John. And Maddie, you can. I'm not going to say Maddie knows more about beer than me now, but he probably does. If you could opine, where's the markup coming from? Now, when I say that, Chicago, for those that are listening outside the city, in Illinois, has a very arcane distribution. You have to use a distributor. Matter of fact, if we became PTI Beer Sales, and my brother does make beer. And we had a saloon in our place, we can serve it there. If we think we're getting popular, we want to also open one up on Western Avenue. I can't just put the cases of beer or the kegs in the back of my Suburban and drive them over there. We need to use a registered distributor, as stupid as that is. So we have to cut a deal with like Anheuser-Busch's guy to drive my beer from one of my places to the other place, which is insane. But now if it's a liquor store, the liquor store has his markup on the other end. So there's three potential, you know, gooses to the price there. I'll use the term. Who do you think's getting it? I don't know, but I would suspect it's probably not the guy brewing the beer that is getting $6 more a four pack.
Oh, right.
So the question is, where is it?
Distributors are taking a bigger chunk of it too.
Or is it just the liquor store deciding to get a bigger markup?
And, you know, I think a lot of this is just kind of a thinly veiled form of market research. When they don't know what maybe the price point is for something until they jack it up high enough where nobody buys it. And until nobody buys it, they'll keep jacking it up. So.
Well, but it's not nobody. It's how much you try and maximize. When somebody says the demand went up or the demand went down, first of all, that is 99% of the time, that's an incorrect statement.
Right,
it's the quantity demanded went up or down because the demand is a curve. So if you have gasoline, even gasoline, which has a short term, I'll lob this one out there. I shouldn't on a Monday morning. Inelastic demand curve, correct?
Right.
Inelastic means it people's demand for quantity demanded doesn't move much in the short term, but it can in the long term. You know, I get rid of the Suburban and I buy a zip car or something, where those little things are, you know, that I can barely fit in, but they go 30 miles at a gallon or 40. I mean, in the long term, I can change my, but I can't really, but if I have to drive 30 miles to work every day in a Suburban, and I'm stuck this week, right? Basically. So that's what it means by inelastic. So so what happens is you try and maximize your income. So if you can, you price your whatever it is, on the demand curve where you maximize the amount. So if I can double my price and I only lose 40% of my volume, I'm ahead of the game, right, Chad?
Right.
But if I double my price and I lose 80%.
Or 60%.
Or 60%.
Yeah,
I start losing.
Right.
That's why, I think today, when people still, just out of force of habit, give all this market power to Saudi Arabia, I don't think they have the market power anymore, John. They may have the market power to move the price around, but not way back in the day in 73 and in the 80s. If Saudi Arabia goosed their price 10%, they probably dropped their volume 1%. So they had market power. Now I think if they lower their price or they raise their price 10%, I don't think they get anything. There's 20 people that they're certainly in the long run. I mean, here, I think their volume drops, 20% or 15 or something. I don't think they get that they control the market anymore. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? I don't think.
Yes. So, yeah, you're right.
But anyway, there's all kinds of stuff going on here. There's the liquor stores. How many liquor stores closed? So is the markup at your place gone from 40% to 70%, or doubled? Now can they double the price that they get? Right. I mean, that's item number one. Did a couple of distributors close? To where there's only
certainly lost clients,
or lost clients. So now we're for this guy to take that from the brewery that you first liked it to the liquor store. Maybe they're charging these guys, $5 a case instead of $3. All right, and then there's your cost. I mean, do you just say, look, I used to sell this to the distributor at $4 a four pack, and now I want $8. So you have to figure out where the change is, or they all do it. Everybody up some. It's possible too. And you'll never know how much, whether they're selling half as much, two thirds as much, or every bit as much. Unless you ask the guy, and he's straight with him. I mean, that's why this is so complicated. And when the government starts messing with it, that's why we have supply chain problems, right?
Well, it's the same thing with groceries, appliances, any kind of things that require, outlays, and people, have to have them. The prices kind of lose all connection to what's really going on in the product because there's so much else built into it, the distribution costs, taxes, everything else is just driving the price up. You can't really separate any of this stuff out and say that this is legitimate, this is not legitimate, this is excessive, this is not excessive. How do you do that? You, as soon as you look at it in one area, it's changing someplace else by the time you get to look at that. So I worry, though, that this is the kind of climate where the average person who has zero leverage, it isn't like you're going to really go, like you use the example of the big box stores or Home Depot or anything else, they have no alternative. They don't have the luxury of choosing anymore. They go where the stuff is being sold, and they can't quibble about the price, and they can't quibble about the cost of getting it to where it's supposed to go. This is what it is, and the people with no leverage keep assisting in further price rises. So there's no real solution to it other than at some point the whole thing starts to teeter and everything stops.
Well, John, how many people do you think that even I was on, it was on the air, so I can say it. I was on Joan Esposito's show, which I've mentioned, and she pretty much blurted out that she didn't have any escalation clause in her contract. Now, I don't know if she's got a 5-year deal or whatever, I didn't ask. I mean, I hope she does because I happen to think she's pretty good. Do you know of anybody? I mean, other than municipal unions. Can you think of anybody who's got an escalation clause in their contract? I mean, Maddie, without talking out of school, I don't know if you have a contract or not. How many people where you work, other than the fact that they've been pretty good to you guys, what you tell me, does anybody have an escalation clause?
Not a clause. We don't have contracts, but we do typically get a cost of living raise every year. That's like 3%.
Okay, so what if the CPI this year is 10? Is everybody going to get 10 before you even start with the other raises?
I doubt it.
I mean, they don't have to.
Right.
The reason why I ask is you've always mentioned those guys have been really good about that. But
I mean, they're mindful of it. And when you basically everyone kind of starts with a 3% raise, which in their mind is covering your cost of living increase, and then you get either an additional raise or nothing, based on performance.
Or nothing, and like it.
Right. So, but everyone kind of at minimum gets a 3%. Now, like you said, if inflation proves to be 8% or 10 or 15 or whatever it is, I don't think they're going to match that. I really don't.
Well, but they're not. They're certainly not forced.
And they're not forced to, right? Some companies aren't giving anything. So,
right. So
that's the problem with the pension systems here. I mean, it's one thing that there's double dipping and simultaneous pensions and all this stuff, but the real killer are the COLAs. That make the whole system unsustainable. They have no relation really to anything other than this is, you know, just a guaranteed uptick every year. Well, you put that across, you know, people in that earning bracket, and there's a guaranteed percentage increase every single year. No wonder it's unsustainable. It's unsustainable from the get-go with that kind of thinking.
Well, if you start from the idea that you know, does inflation hurt? Maybe if it was done properly, a stock split doesn't hurt, right? The stock drops by half, and now you got twice as many shares. There's no harm, no foul. Everybody gets it. You don't give it to half the shareholders and not the rest. But inflation is not even. That's why it hurts. And I'm going to say that all the people that I know the people who work here in the building, and I think the guy here is reasonably generous, but I don't know. I guarantee you that those guys, if the inflation's 5% this year, they're not getting a 5% raise just to be even. I mean, if he gives them a 5% raise, he's gonna act like the heart popped out of his chest, right? I'm giving you guys a 5% raise. I mentioned to Joan that I said, Joan, it's none of my business, but say you're making $1 million a year. I hope you are. You know, I love your show. I said, but if you got a 5-year contract, the end of the fifth year, that $1 million is worth like $560 from when you started. And she's like, really? I go, yeah. Ding, ding, ding. I mean, it can be very debilitating for people who aren't in that. And that's what I'm seeing right now, John, is the early stages of it. This is akin to not 1978 or 9 when a lot of people had clauses. This is akin to 1971 or 2 when it just was starting and nobody had one, right?
Right.
And I think it's, not to mention, there's going to be some people that bump up a tax bracket if this keeps going. And all of a sudden, the single biggest benefactor of inflation is the government. And I'll talk more about that tomorrow maybe. But John, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you later in the week. S&P futures now only down 5. They've come back. We're down 10. We started buy the dip. Always works. Well, at least people think it always works. NASDAQ futures up 52. We'll be right back. We have Jeff or Mike.
I actually don't know yet.
Well, hopefully we'll have one of
those.
They
were kind of missing MIA last week, so we'll find out.
All right. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks one way or the other.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
The This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Carson Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now. Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up, down 5. NASDAQ is up 57. Manny, what year were you born?
1983.
All right, so I could get the. Doesn't go back far enough for me. who's the highest paid athlete in the year you were born?
If I had to guess, I would say, is it, I don't know if boxers were the highest paid back then, but if I had to guess, I would
you're
say...
You're up like, by a year, by the way, with the boxer.
Okay. I would say, like, Magic Johnson, maybe?
No.
Didn't he get a big contract around that time?
He did, but he was a million, I think.
Yeah.
Mike Schmidt.
Oh, okay. Phillies.
1.65 million. So there you go. By the way, you were a year off because in 1984, it was Marvin Hagler.
Okay.
Doesn't go back to my year. Starts the first year was Rod Carew in like 1971.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was, I do remember he was a high paid guy, but I didn't realize he was that high. Alright, around markets. Dow up down 136. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 96 cents. Let's call that one flat. FTSE down 36.5. CAC around down 11.2. So not much going on in Europe. Europe's been relatively slow unless we make a big move. Nikkei though, wow, up 628, 2.25, making back all that they were lagging last week or two. Shanghai up 23.7%, Hang Seng up 170.6. Just as a way of review on Friday, it's a nice day. On Friday, up 448 in the Dow. S&P up 49. That's a lot. NASDAQ up 142. So Friday was a big bull day. It got back everything that we were down earlier in the week. It looked like it was going to be a horribly down week, and then it ended up up. All three averages are, I think, a record highs here. Bonds, 1.34, down 1 basis point. Bund down 1 basis point to negative 0.30. Japan, positive 0.03, unchanged. UK, negative 0.02 to 0.63. Positive 0.63. I keep saying positive and negative over there. Oil down $1.05. That's 1.5%, 73.51. That's West Texas. Brent down $1.08 at 74.47. Natural gas up a penny, 3.68. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.26. I think this natural gas is going to stay up there. These guys are what? We're already middle of July, and these guys are in what? 4 record heat waves, for God's sake, already? Out west, so they got to be using a lot of natural gas for AC. Gold down $9, 18.01. Silver down 20 cents, 26.03. Copper down 5 cents, 4.28. Earnings start this week, by the way. So we'll be talking about those as the week goes on. Need some heavy-duty earnings to grow into this market. I think we might get them, actually. Bitcoin down $401, 33,520. So virtually right in the middle of this 29 to 36 range. Maybe a little upper bound in the middle. But it's hanging right there. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
It's been there for a while, it seems like.
Yeah.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're actually still off to a pretty good start here on a Monday morning. Figured a lot of people would be heading back into work today. But it seems pretty light. We do have some traffic delays on the Kennedy, but that's normal. No issues on the Edens. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower. Especially there's a closure for that Windy City Smokeout concert that happened all weekend that has Madison closed between Paulina and Damon. So that's affecting a lot of the exits as you approach downtown off the Eisenhower. But no major delays there outside of normal. Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, and they're continuing to be quiet. And the only crash in the area is in the northwestern suburbs. It looks like Route 59 at Rand Road. There is an accident. But everything else all good out there. Weather today, clouds and a lot of rain in the area. In fact, there's going to be rain throughout the week. That begins Saturday afternoon. Rained all day yesterday. And there's more rain in the forecast today with a high of 73. Right now it's overcast, still dry, and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, there's rain in the forecast down there today as well with a high of 109. But right now it's still clear and dry and 93. In sports, White Sox wrapped up their first half easily in first place in the AL Central. They've won five in a row after beating Baltimore 7-5 in 10 innings yesterday. Adam Engel was the hero, hitting a three-run homer to break a 4-4 tie in the top of the 10th. Cubs were rained out at Wrigley, so they'll limp into the All-Star break, having lost 8 out of 10. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 7-4. NBA basketball, Suns now lead 2-1 as they were blown out in Milwaukee by the Bucks 120-100 in the NBA Finals. Italy topped England 2-1 in the European Championships on penalties. The John Deere Classic took place this weekend over in the Quad Cities, Silvis, Illinois to be exact, and Lucas Glover won that tournament, shooting 19 under. Chief.
My German buddy who's really into this soccer picked, Italy early on. And he said on paper the best team was, Belgium. That they had the best players.
Yeah.
But that Italy played together better, and he was right.
Well, I really liked the England team just from what I'd seen from them, and they obviously made the final. And if you watched them, they were very physical with Italy, and Italy's a big flopping team, which a lot of the European teams are, European players are, but England not as much.
Well, you're not supposed to whack into somebody in soccer.
I know that, but it's a physical game, and England is very physical, and I really thought they were going to win that game, and then they made their first two penalties, and their goalie made a big save on one of Italy's first two penalties, and so it looked like England was in the driver's seat, and then all of a sudden they missed, you know, three straight penalty kicks to close it out, and that was it.
Well, the all right, educate me on soccer. The penalty kick, is it always from that one spot, or is it wherever the penalty took place?
A penalty kick is always from that one spot. A free kick is different, and that's where the foul took place. So if it's outside of the box, then it's wherever the foul took place. If it's inside the box, you get a penalty kick from the same spot.
Okay, so...
And then to close out a tournament like that, so typically, you know, soccer just ends in a tie. But since it was the final... they played extra time, and then since no one scored in the extra time, then they went to penalties, and it's best of five.
If somebody doesn't make a penalty kick, I mean, you're supposed to make them like 90% of the time, right?
It's a very high percentage, yeah, you're supposed to make them.
It's not
the
like
goalie
that.
Is essentially guessing every time, one way or the other, and as long as you put it on target, you should.
Yeah, so you got a 50-50 chance of me being able to make it, right? Because he's going to go the wrong way.
Right, assuming you can put it on net, right.
Well, I couldn't kick it hard enough to go around the net, so...
Well, you don't... I mean, you're not that far away. To me, if they... You know, some guys seemingly make it every time, but some of them, the pressure is so big, especially with the... You know, when your whole country is kind of on your back...
Oh, yeah.
...that you can really see. I mean, they're missing wide. I mean, like...
Well, they try and make it perfect. They miss the corner.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But, all right, we were having this debate last night with my nephews. What is this Ohtani guy? Have the rules changed on the DH?
How so?
Well, I mean, I thought, and again, I'm probably wrong, I thought that when that thing started, the DH was a separate spot. And so if you're the DH and I pitch in for you, the only place that guy could go is the DH spot. And now they're saying, my nephews are saying, no, the guy can, you can now have him go play the field. It's like a regular position. I never thought that. I mean, I don't know what, so, I mean, if when Ohtani plays, they don't use a DH, right? He's just a hitter.
Right. When he plays,
when he's a pitcher.
When he's a pitcher, right. Exactly. Yep. They use him as a hitter.
So then if he comes out and you bring another pitcher, then that guy's got a hit.
I would assume so, yeah.
Okay, so, but if he, they said a couple times, though, they moved him from the mound to the outfield. So then the other guy, whoever comes in to pitch, whoever it is, still got a hit, right? There's no way you can, if you start with a DH, that spot in the lineup always becomes a DH, and the guy can't go play a position, right?
Right.
No matter what, now even if people are hurt.
Yeah, so like if a player enters the game in place of a DH, either as a pinch hitter or a pinch runner, that person becomes the DH in the lineup.
And you lose him, he can't go play right field if the right fielder bangs his head against the wall.
That would be my understanding, yes.
All right, that makes sense.
So it says if a player I pulled up the rule. It says if a player serving as the DH is later used on defense, he continues to bat in his same lineup spot, but for the rest of the game, his team cannot use a DH to bat in place of the pitcher.
All right, so if the right fielder gets hurt and the DH goes to play right field, then he stays in, then the pitcher now has to bat in the right fielder's spot.
Right. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense.
And it says a team is also barred from using a DH for the rest of the game if the pitcher moves from the mound to another defensive position.
Okay. So then, all right, so the pitcher moves to right field. The right fielder comes out because you obviously put another pitcher in. Now what?
Yeah, if the pitcher moves from the mound to another defensive position, a player pinch hits for any other player and then becomes the pitcher, or the current pitcher pinch hits or pinch runs for the DH, you are barred from using a DH for the rest of the game.
But there's still, so the pitcher now has to hit.
Right. Yeah, the DH, you've lost the DH.
Right, so the pitcher goes into the DH's spot in the lineup? Or he goes in the right fielder's spot in the lineup. He's got to be in the right field. He's going to DH. He's got to be in the DH spot. He becomes the DH
exactly,
then, the pitcher.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
So the DH has to come out.
Right.
All right, because none of this made any difference. So Tiny Guy showed up.
Yeah, that's true. And, looking forward to watching him play in the All-Star game because we don't get to see him play very much, obviously. And I think when the Angels were in town...
I've never seen him play.
Yeah.
The Angels never ran. Plus, they're not that good, so you don't get him on the national
team. They're not that good, and yet they have probably the two best players in all of baseball.
Yeah.
But Mike Trout's hurt, and so he's out. But yeah, they're still not. And really, they added Rendon, who was the star player for the Nationals when they won the World Series a couple years ago. So really, I think they have three of the best six players in all of baseball, and yet they're still somehow not good. That just shows how many guys you have to have in baseball to be good.
Yeah. Well, plus you got to have those guys playing every day, which they don't.
I mean, right.
Well, Otani's sort of starting to, but
yeah.
I wonder if there'd have been a DH since the dawn of time in baseball. How many pitchers would have also DH'd? I'm going to say I bet there would have been at least 10.
That's possible.
Because I mean, the guys that come up that are really good hitters lose their. You know, if you only bat once every 4 days, you lose it as you go.
I would think, yeah, especially as the competition gets better, too.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, Ken Brett, he wasn't as good a hitter as his brother, but he was pretty darn good when he came up. I bet he would have been one of them.
Kevin writes in, so what if an all-star team gives up the DH? There are extra players on the roster so they can pinch hit for the pitcher, and every pinch hitter is an all-star hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question that Kevin also wrote in regarding the last segment.
Why doesn't he just call in if he's got all these questions?
Well, I know. He says, are cost of living raises transient like the Fed says inflation is?
Well, then you have to... well, definitely. I mean, there's no... That's my point, is if you have a cost of living... I don't recall any of these, and I did a few of them back in the day. In other words, if the people at Pullman... The union people, not me. If there was an inflation 1/4 of 1%, or actually 1 month of 1%, I think the union got. I should check with a couple of my guys, but I think the union's contract was, it wasn't a full 100. It was like 80 or 75%. So okay, they get a 0.8% raise that month. Well, next month, if the CPI was down, we didn't take any money back from them. It never was down, but if it would have been down. Even the contract, I don't think we... well, that's a good question. I don't think anybody ever thought that anything was going down. If all of a sudden we had a down month, would we have had lower our price to the MBTA? I think not. I think it only went up. But I'm not sure about that. Boy, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, that is a good question.
Yeah, it might have. I would say that the contract would have gone down more than... I mean, you don't hear of the Chicago Teachers Union ever getting have to give back money because inflation was down 1 year.
Never.
No, I don't think you do that. So, yeah, I don't. I mean, plus, it's probably not. It's not even really cumulative. So, it's. You know, well, yeah, well,
I was actually talking with a Chicago public school teacher that I randomly at a bar on Friday. Not that I ever go to those places. And she's
any place I go?
No, a place in the New Hood called 6 Degrees. Free plug there. Great bar. Only been there twice now, but
is that the one right down the block?
It's right down the block on Damon, just south of Armitage. And so Jill.
It's got to be near the French place.
Yeah, it's right across the street.
Okay,
right across the street from there. So on the east side of Damon. Jill, my wife, was in Indianapolis for the weekend on a girls' trip. She met some friends that she went to college with. That one of them lives in Indianapolis now. So it was kind of centrally located between where the other ones all lived. So
they just talk about you all weekend.
Maybe a little bit, but so
anything
she was
good.
I don't know. Didn't ask, but but. So they were there, so I went to this bar by myself to have like a sandwich, and of course I ran into like two people I know, and then you know you start talking to people, and then
one thing leads to another.
Yeah, then the owner, this one lady's talking to me, and she's you know probably around 50 or so, and she owns the bar, and she's really nice, and so she's introducing me to all the regulars, like I'm going to make this your new regular bar and all this stuff. So anyway, I was talking to this teacher, and you know so she's off for the summer, and she's probably. I would say close to late 50s. She's probably getting close to retiring because teachers, don't they retire like really young? But
it depends. A lot of them make it 65.
Yeah. So anyway, she was talking basically.
But they're not the 20 year and out. They go the whole way pretty much.
Yeah. Well, she was kind of echoing kind of what you thought regarding the e-learning aspect of CPS. She said that basically it was just like your regular class. You have the 10% at the top that are going to do great no matter what. You have the sort of, you know, 70 or 80% in the middle that, you know, might need a little boost here and there, but we'll get by. And then you have your 10 or 15%, whatever it is, at the bottom. And they're just gone.
Yeah.
Like, she just like, we just lost track of them. And she was more worried than I think most teachers that I've talked to about the sort of lost year in education. But yeah, she said it was really tough teaching that sort of bottom half of the class, was really tough because you lost half of them and then the other half, you just couldn't keep their attention.
Did you ask the critical question?
Which is?
Did she have to pass everybody?
And
if not, why not, Maddie?
That she had to pass everybody. Is it up to her to pass everybody? I don't know.
That's why
I think she just gave the grade whatever.
I think not.
I don't know.
One of my buddies, whose girlfriend teaches on the south side, and had I think she flunked two or three of them, and she was called into the principal's office. And let's put it this way: if they had a paddle, they would have used it. And they said, "You're not flunking anybody." And she says, "Well, they didn't even show up. Doesn't matter." So there you go.
There you go. Well, I actually think it doesn't matter, but that's me personally. But
well, pass them into what? Pass them if they're a year older, or pass them if they now belong in eighth grade?
Well, I just don't think seventh or eighth grade matters at all. So it's like, you know, okay, let's say if you fell a little bit behind in seventh grade, do a crash course at the beginning of eighth grade, and you're fine. It's not going to cost you
life.
But
the same kid,
like, who gives a crap?
The same kid who every I'm going to say
I don't remember anything I learned in seventh grade.
I think. You remember everything you do. You just don't remember it was in seventh grade.
Well, that's probably true. But my point is you could probably, like I said, spend the first 2 months of eighth grade and do a crash course on seventh grade and really not be any farther behind.
There's a psychological word for what you're doing. And by the way, it's all messed up. If it was you and me and we got the opportunity, if we were the same age, I can't imagine that, but if we were the same age and somebody said, hey, somebody's uncle's taking us on a worldwide educational tour for September and October of our seventh grade, but when you come back, you're going to have to stay after school for 3 weeks for 2 hours to learn what you missed and catch up. Yeah, but that would be you and me that would actually work harder when we got back, and probably your uncle make us study something while we were on a trip. It's not what we're talking about.
Fair.
We're talking about, I mean, because as you work your way up, what, in fourth grade, you diagram sentences, which I'm sure you don't know anymore. In fifth grade, the history of this.
Third grade, you learned cursive. I remember that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't just have somebody not show up for third grade and in fourth grade act like he can write. He can't. He didn't learn it.
That's true. And I don't remember how to diagram sentences, by the way.
But you speak it's well second, enough where it's you've learned enough of it.
It's second nature, I guess. So I must have learned something.
I don't see you.
But if someone asked me to like diagram sentences, I wouldn't even know where to start.
No, but I don't notice you putting the adjective behind the noun too often.
No,
or the verb. You don't start off a sentence with
a
verb.
But I think you just picked that up in living.
Well, okay, but I mean, but these basics, they're in there, is what I'm saying.
They are. That's true.
I mean, people think that they develop the morality themselves. Somebody told them the difference between right and wrong when they were young. Everybody's got the ego that they figured it all out themselves, but you didn't.
Of course not.
I mean, I don't remember what... I mean, in college or high school, I can remember what first year was algebra, second year was geometry, third year was trigonometry, right?
Right.
So, I mean, if you missed junior year, where would you pick up the trigonometry? At the ballpark?
I never... I remember algebra, I remember geometry, and then I remember getting out of trigonometry, where I was able to do math electives, because I hated it so much, and I sucked at it so much, and it was so boring, and I knew I was never going to use it or need it. I just found a way to get around it, and I really struggled with algebra and geometry, because it was so boring to me, and meant so little to me. And even now, it means so little to
me. Well, it's because...
and I don't use it, and well, I don't need it.
I'd love to shoot pool against you if you don't know any geometry.
but I was much stronger in English and writing and some of those types of things, and I had much more interest in those things, and I remember those well. I guess everyone's different, but, yeah, I never even did trigonometry.
Well, it's interesting. I was always so much better in math than I was in writing and stuff, and yet... when I got to college, and I was in pre-med, but I never wanted to be a doctor, but that was the pre-science thing, and everybody took calculus and all that stuff. I had never done better on an English test in my life than a math test. But then after that, I went in economics, which is essentially a behavioral science.
Yeah.
And I did a lot more writing and a lot less math. And when I took my MBA boards, I actually did better on the English than I did on the math.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is, you know, it never happened before. But you forget math. You don't.
Yeah.
You know, you don't use calculus on a daily basis.
You don't use any of it. You use adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing, and that's it.
Well, that's why I would never let you lay out a kitchen.
Well, true. Although my mom's been doing that for 50 years, but
well, she can do it. I didn't. You can't.
Yeah, but
she had utmost confidence in.
Yeah, but because that's what she does for a living.
Yeah.
But
it's not that you couldn't learn it. You could.
I could learn it. Yeah, I could learn it. But I don't need to, you know, when I think of geometry, I think of this stupid metal compass thing and drawing circles and shit, and I hated that stuff.
Well, you couldn't draw one freehand. You're not Leonardo da Vinci.
That's true.
Didn't he draw one freehand? It was perfect?
That's the rumor.
That's the rumor.
Yeah, the legend, anyway.
But the thing of it is, man, is whether we should pass kids or not pass kids, the point is you don't want, when you're talking to, how can I say this without being politically incorrect? Society, the people who are paying the taxes, are paying 14, 15, 18 grand a year for this kid to go to school. So to have a year like last year, which hopefully we'll never have again, but even a regular year where 10% of the kids like don't show up, you don't even know where they are, to accept the money, the 15 grand a kid times 10,000 kids in the system from the state, never even see him and pass him like nothing happened. I mean, if that isn't fraud, I don't know what is. And for people who are paying those taxes, when you see people on TV, and they're not all black, obviously, well, all of a sudden they're 25 and they can't talk, they can't write, they can't put a sentence together, and oh, by the way, they can't give you change in the McDonald's. You shouldn't wonder why. The world has decided to pay for, right, with public education. You say, we'd rather have everybody have a base level of knowledge so they can not only live their life without people laughing at them, you know, But they should be able to add and subtract and by the way, talk. I'm not saying you should be able to diagram it. I'm not so sure I could diagram it, Matty, but at least I know.
I couldn't.
No, but at least you know what an adjective and an adverb are.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think if you went to a normal population and started asking how many people even know? I mean, there's you keep the stuff you use. I keep the math I use for the market, right? I don't keep calculus. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, totally.
But the point is, when it comes to money, how much money did we piss away last year on people that didn't get their year of education, and yet teachers...
Well, you're paying for the teachers.
Okay, they all got paid, but I'm saying that the
I don't disagree with you. I think they should have been back teaching, and I don't think they... I didn't like the fact that tons of people were getting paid.
But these are teachers you and I are talking to. But these are teachers you and I are talking to and say, you can't just dump somebody on the 8th grade teacher who didn't even do 7th grade.
That's true.
You know, I think with summer school would be the idea. Anyway, SP futures down 175. We already bought the dip. Maddie, how many futures did you buy down? 11, 20? NASDAQ up 62. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.